Every couple of weeks, I drive my mother-in-law to her afternoon card club in Port Wing, Wisconsin. While she plays 500, my dog Pip and I go birding. Right now, I have brand new binoculars, and my goal is to see a bunch of cool species through them, so I was especially happy for an opportunity to augment my new list, even though we're always in Port Wing in early afternoon, the worst time of day for birding. And August 24th was particularly lousy for finding birds as far as weather goes. The temperature never veered from 57 degrees, and the wind was fierce, 20 to 30 miles per hour, gusting to over 40. Belying the coldness of the water, Lake Superior was the color of espresso, churned up iron sediment, making the water rich brown with foamy whitecaps. At the breakwater at the beach, giant waves splashed at least 10 feet over the rocks, so the usual crowd of hundreds of herring and ring-billed gulls and at least a few Caspian and common terns were gone. A few herring gulls flew overhead, but apparently the bulk of them were hiding out somewhere less exposed. Despite the poor conditions, I added 14 species to my new binoculars list, including those herring gulls. Except for a big flock of starlings on a wire and a bunch of crows gathered on a recently mowed field, most of my birds were seen one by one. But the one that I saw the most times throughout that day was the flicker. My first year of birding, 1975, Russ and I visited his parents in Port Wing for the week before Labor Day. I got lots of lifers, breaking 100 on my life list, but one of the strongest memories I have of that whole week was of flickers. They were here, there, and everywhere. Some were perched on telephone poles, but most were flying up from every little dirt road, always from ahead before we got there, so always flying away, their large white rump patch exposed. I'd seen flickers early on that first spring, and many other times in that summer, but that fall was when I experienced them so very frequently that when one flew up, I stopped pulling up my binoculars and just watched. At first, I confused their silhouette on the ground with that of robins, but that week is when I got that straight, too. The longer we bird, the more birds we truly know, to the extent that just a tiny glimpse is all we need to recognize them. Of course, that happens with some species more quickly than others, and at first we don't always realize that the birds we're seeing a lot may not be the only ones with the features we're starting to recognize. I was pretty sure I knew robins completely. All it took was a quick glimpse at a silhouette on the ground, and I was certain. But that week in 1975 is when I realized that Veery's and Swainson's thrushes have the same shape. They're smaller, but the proportions are identical, and size is not very useful. Once I figured that out, I started paying attention to other features that made it clear which was clear, even in awful light when colors weren't visible through my inexpensive binoculars. For a couple of years, robins flying overhead blended in with all the other unidentifiable flying objects, until I started paying attention to their distinctive flight call, the way they whipped their wings back, and the spot of white from the lower belly to the tail visible even when no colors can be discerned. There's a comfort and quiet joy in recognizing our favorite birds, no matter what they're doing. There's so much anger and random violence in the world right now, but somehow watching flickers flying up from the same dirt roads they're always flying up from in late August, I had that lovely feeling that the world was exactly as it should be. Of course it isn't, at least not for us human beings, but as long as flickers fly up from roadsides in early autumn, we can be assured that a tiny bit of normalcy and sanity remain. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.